Welcome to Product-Led Growth Leaders, where we learn about the bold path of building digital products that sell themselves. Let's listen to product leaders who can give us a glimpse into the innovative thinking process. Showcasing and celebrating these awesome folks, I'm your host, UX and product design veteran, Thomas Watkins. Welcome to Product-Led Growth Leaders. We've got a great guest for the show today, Sam Fankuchen. He has a background in education, mentorship, entrepreneurship. He's been a director at software companies, a board member for a lot of organizations. He's been an editor as well. Today, he is founder and CEO of Golden, which is a popular and globally awarded platform for experiencing golden moments through service. Sam, thanks for being here.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you, Thomas.
So let's talk about the problem first that you guys are addressing. Steep us in understanding what is it that folks are going through when they're struggling with whatever it is before they come to what you offer.
Sure. So we are a technology ecosystem, which means that there are a variety of different types of users of the technology who come to us for different reasons. And so it's probably easiest to begin by segmenting the different types of users classically that we see, but there are certainly examples of people who break the mold. So for an everyday person, a consumer, very often many of us feel inspired to serve others in some way. And prior to Golden, it was very difficult to translate an interest in being of service to others, as in volunteering or fundraising or doing advocacy or simply just helping a neighbor. And so we created a variety of technologies, including very famously mobile apps, that would personalize actionable opportunities to anyone of any background and allow them to instantly sign up and partake in these activities, which on paper or in the app itself looks very easy. It looks like using OpenTable or Hotel Tonight or any other modern software system you're used to using that will serve you content and you engage with the content. But under the surface, we needed to understand where that content came from, and we needed to structure the inventory and the network supporting that content in a way that nobody had done before. And so that meant identifying different organizations, opportunities they had, schedules, requirements, etc., and serving them to an everyday person so the everyday person could see them, sign up with conviction, follow through, and not deal not just with uncertainty or complexity or asynchronous interactions, but instead see themselves in these golden moments and let all of the process, whether it's straightforward signups or highly regulated, sensitive audience situations with vulnerable populations, that we can put them in the experience they envision. So that's one set of users, which would be consumer user. And I will pause there.
Okay. Yeah. So let me dive in with that one. So when you're going into this, it sounds to me like people helping people have skill sets and things where they can be somehow useful to various projects or companies and things like that. Is that the case? Is that the step one? But they don't necessarily know the best connection points between themselves and those opportunities.
So let's say that you have the interest in volunteering. Most people, if they have that interest, do not know where to start and how to do it. And by the time that they figure out what that journey looks like on their own, their interest becomes diminished. And many times people never even follow through at all. And in our view, we want to broaden the lens of who can do this, how they can do it, why it's rewarding to them personally, and build technology that puts them in the center of that experience rather than puts them in line for the next stage in the process.
Are they able to somehow quickly learn whether it's a fit for them? So if I say, hey, I want to volunteer and help build physical shelters or something like that. I don't know if that's a good example for the use cases you do. You can replace that with a better organization. Yeah.
I guess the question, I would reframe that question as saying, how much does the person need to know about what they want to do? And for us, you don't have to really know anything. You can open the app and we will show you things that we know you can do as a regular person. and the technology is very sophisticated. And so as we learn about you, we can continue to personalize that feed of options for you in such a way where you don't have to dig under the covers and figure out if you're qualified. We're only going to show you things we know you're qualified to do, and we're going to get you placed in them quickly. So in other words, if something has a requirement, like a language requirement, we're not sure if you meet it, we won't show it to you. If something has an upcoming time scheduled, but the capacity for that session is full, we're not going to show it to you. Those kinds of things. Because we don't want somebody having the feeling of discovering something that looks really compelling, only to find out later that it doesn't exist, or they're not qualified, or there are a bunch of steps that they have to go through first and their expectations get changed. If anything, we want people to feel like it was much easier than they thought and a much better fit than they thought. And that begins basically with having a high quality content selection to begin with. It also requires you to understand how to segment that content and personalize the content to people using machine learning, and then go beyond that and understand what inspired somebody to have the idea in the first place, what pattern of engagement is natural for them, and to use AI to help them personalize a lifelong journey or an episodic journey or anything else that seems appropriate. And so even though there's tons of technology involved in delivering a very simple user experience, we're incrementally leaning into that technology as it becomes relevant for the individual so that all they see is a great place to go to get started and get engaged and stay engaged in meaningful activities.
Okay, so as a person who wants to do things, rather than scaring myself away by going down a YouTube rabbit hole or just going this, oh God, this is, or even trying to sign up for something and it's asking me 30 questions, and of which only 4 of them might be super important for really whether or not I would be a fit for it, you're cutting through the noise and somehow finding the most important things to make sure that those connections happen. Is that the case?
Yeah, and it doesn't seem that complicated when you're actually looking at the product. An easier way to look at this would be to switch gears and talk about one of the other types of audiences that uses our product. So for example, somebody who organizes programs. And we support 52,000 organizations in the US and on 6 continents around the world whose interests range from getting neighbors to show up and pass out health equipment to other neighbors to refugee resettlement with IRC. And if you were to look at something on the more complicated end, let's say refugee resettlement with IRC, there are obviously going to be requirements to do a lot of that work. But we don't need to hit the user with all those requirements up front, make them feel like they've got a digital stack of paperwork that they have to get through whenever they're noble enough to sacrifice their time to do that. Instead, we try and understand really what the organizer is trying to accomplish and the fundamental parameters of how that would happen. And then we progressively distribute what they need to the right audiences in such a way that's very compelling, safe, and efficient for them to do whatever is required of them. So even in the case of refugee resettlement, and in the case where there are strict requirements, the organizer needs people who meet those requirements. They still want more people to do it. Their program will not sustain itself if they don't expand, for example, the supporters who are helping enable the operations of that program. And these are classic information design questions, user experience design questions, interaction design questions. And we spend a lot of time doing R&D around that so that somebody who's in a product can just get what they need done quickly, efficiently, and in a way that they feel fulfilled.
Yeah, and for the audience, the listeners, it might not be obvious a lot of the time how much work goes into making something simple. Because when you're hearing this talked about us, oh yeah, I just put the but the reality is, one of the things to help understand this is reality is always super noisy. And systematically cutting down on that noise is just really difficult because you have to think through all these wildly different use cases. You try to create a rule for, oh, we'll just simply do X. But then when you look at the real world use cases, oh, wait, that doesn't really hold cleanly all the time. So there's a lot of work that comes into making things simple. And that's where the success is. You can tell that this idea is a good idea because it sounds like something that obviously should exist. Yeah, it should be the case that if you really want to do something, you log on to whatever, some tool, and then you get instantly connected and you can see what's a great fit for you. But the reality is, doing these things well is just a really difficult feat to pull off.
Yeah. And let's switch gears again, not to dodge a question, but to link this conversation to your audience in maybe a slightly more precise way. This is the Product-Led Growth Podcast, right? And so let's assume that folks are here to figure out some unlocks with their digital technology so that they can flow more users through it and get more transaction volume or whatever the case may be. It's really important to have the value proposition be so obvious and so accessible that users can self-serve and get that, or else it's very hard to get scale. Otherwise, you're going to be doing a lot of hand-holding, a lot of experiments, a lot of human intervention, instead of just letting the technology in general, any technology, any marketplace, any ecosystem work the way it should. And so for a technical operator of a platform like that, these are considerations you need to have. Who are the users? What are they trying to accomplish? What are the requirements for them to accomplish it? What kind of data infrastructure? What kind of automation are we going to add so that things feel seamless? And you need to have an architecture that allows you to continually be working toward the big picture while you iterate really quickly on interaction level considerations. And so for us, we knew that there was a lot of complexity to do something that felt so simple, and we didn't want to lose the urgency and the confidence in the user doing the things that we thought should be straightforward. And to do that, we had to be very meticulous about data model and privacy and so many other things. I'll pause there in case you want to go deeper into PLG conversations or if you want to go deeper into business development.
One side of the PLG conversation that I am interested, curious about is, where do you guys fit on this continuum where it's services on one side being provided straight up by human workers versus a self-serve, a SaaS system? And do you, and if you're on that services side, do you aspire to becoming SaaS?
We are best known for being freemium SaaS. So most of our users are free users, self-serve users. We also support a lot of really complex enterprises like the state of California government or ARP or the Salvation Army. And it's because we have a very clean architecture that uses the best technologies that are available to standardize and scale common use cases while also giving folks the access to tailor that implementation however is required for them. And by that, integrations with third-party services, roles and permissions, stuff like that. I don't mean we're going to put you on a two-year deployment lifecycle with implementation specialists and fees. We try to help people who have the potential to use our technology in very powerful ways make sure that they have a solid launch and support as they go. But we are not pay for services firm. We're not a work for hire firm. We are a technology self-serve ecosystem with enterprise capabilities as well.
Make sure everybody hears the website, goldenvolunteer.com is where you find this stuff. And so this is a two-sided economy. Forget the word for it, right? But you have, is that the case where you have the folks who want to do work, participate, volunteer, all of that stuff. And then the people who are putting together the programs, all of that can get set up and folks can find each other easily with this.
Yes, we are interested in the space that we're working on because we think fundamentally it is a very large and poorly organized labor market. And so we put in architecture that we thought could structure and scale the performance of that labor market, which means that at the very minimum, it's a two-sided marketplace. The way we think about it is far beyond that. So the basic two-sided marketplace would be organizers of programs and participants in those programs. In the real world, those programs aren't always operated by nonprofits or sustained by nonprofits. In other words, healthcare institutions, governments, corporate social responsibility programs, disaster relief organizers, and many faith groups, many other institutions are involved in these discretionary labor markets, let's call them. And they have different use cases. Those use cases could be directly I want to engage somebody in this program in my physical location. They could be less direct, meaning we have virtual or on your own time programs that people can do from anywhere. Or they could even be separated functionally from that level of activity because an entity might have an incentive for driving engagement. And that entity might be a government, it may be a volunteer center, it could be a university, it could be a big foundation that has an interest in elevating quality of life in a certain way using a portfolio of network partners. And so to do that, you start to extrapolate. You're no longer just a provider and a beneficiary of something. You have to provide common technology that allows for dynamic, direct, and indirect relationships. Many times within existing organizations or beyond them, and organizations don't always have the same structure in terms of hierarchies or roles and permissions, programs, etc. And so we provide a layer of control that allows complicated organizations, whether they have three programs in one chapter or whether they have 3,000 chapters across the globe, to have the kinds of capabilities that are appropriate for their people doing their work.
Is this a good space for folks to build up their profile, almost maybe probably to a lesser degree than you would do on LinkedIn or something, of work history, ratings, or anything like that? Or is that just integrated to other tools?
Yeah, it's both. So we would like people to live in their golden moments. That's why Golden's consumer products exist. And to do that, we're not just personalizing content and tracking whether or not somebody fulfilled whatever they signed up to do. We are monitoring in real time the throughput, productivity, feelings, two-way feedback, referrals, and so many other things that are involved in these interactions. And that way, we can provide a more meaningful place for the user to come back and reflect on their experience or go deeper, or for AI to help them identify where things are going well and where things may need a change. And that is the beauty of having, again, like really clean architecture and the right user permissions, so that you get the trust to do that if the user wants us to do that. And so that we can use the system to give them increasingly more rewarding experiences.
How did you find the, because this, none of this is easy to do, in terms of the folks on your team who are helping put this together, do you try to cultivate a mindset of innovation, a problem-solving attitude in order to push this forward? Because this is not easy to achieve.
It's very culture-led. That's the most important thing in our entire company, and it's the center of everything we do. And we're really deliberate about defining and maintaining and enhancing that culture over time and allowing the culture to prevail over behavior or over one person's conviction that's not defensible in the context of what we're trying to do as a team. We're super concrete about that. Beyond that, and because we have so much conviction around what we're out here to do, and because we've really been pioneering in this space, we tend to have a gravitational pull among people who have set up their lives to do the kind of work that we endeavor to do. And if they had the choice, they would choose to do that on our team because of the resources and camaraderie that we have. And that comes down into the way that we build product and interact with users and interact with each other. But again, it's very culturally influenced. I would also say that as a result of having so much conviction and demonstrating how we can shape the landscape where we operate, we have also attracted very unusually talented subject matter experts in the fields where we operate. So our engineering, our product, our client strategy, our business folks are all coming from backgrounds of having profound responsibility for other projects. And those projects will have informed the level of interest that they have in the work that we do with our clients today at Golden.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've been speaking with Sam Fankuchen of Golden, and that is goldenvolunteer.com. So folks, go ahead and check that out and see where you can fit in. Who is perfect for this? It's really organizations that are trying to get stuff done, or mostly probably in the nonprofit area, or even maybe a little bit outside that.
Yeah, Golden is great for anyone trying to recruit, screen, schedule, track, re-engage volunteers and donors in activities. Whether you're directly trying to do that for your own program, or you manage a portfolio, or you're influencing participation in programs like that, Golden is the most award-winning social impact software in the world. And we have built category-defining software and AI tools for every kind of person, whether that's an individual or an organizer from any sector, to have a real-time, automated, and highly personalized AI-forward set of visibility into delivering golden moments at scale.
If you guys win, everybody wins. And I really mean that, because anyone who's dabbled in these kinds of worlds, it's just not an area where the tech industry just puts a lot of priority and focus. And so it's not the case that all the best talent goes into solving problems like this, but to have a good tool out there that can become sort of the choice where folks can hop in and start using it, that is really great. Hope everyone checks that out. And finally, are there any roadmap items you think that folks should be excited about in the next couple of years?
Yeah, absolutely. And I should also say that most of our software is free. The people who are paying for our software are doing that because they need enterprise integrations with other systems of record, where they want real-time bi-directional synchronization, or they're doing transactions on our platform for specific parts of their workflow. Other than that, most of the core product is free and will always be free. And in fact, we made a $500 million commitment this year to offer some paid software to folks whose primary sources of funding had been disrupted by changes to certain programs like USAID, AmeriCorps, FEMA, et cetera. I wouldn't be deterred by all the high-level language that we've discussed today about what the platform does. It's really a good starting point for anyone, whether you're large or small. The things that we're working on in the future have a lot to do with applying the world's best technologies to extend the kinds of use cases we're talking about. So you can imagine AI throughout the user-facing products. You can imagine much more instantaneous and personalized and rewarding engagements as a result of applying those technologies.
Yeah, especially since a lot of people in these spaces are not necessarily taking advantage of the most cutting edge stuff. Folks have their ways of doing things. They've got their email account and Google Sheets or something like that, and they're just hobbling together workflows, and just empowering that space is just so important. GoldenVolunteer.com. And Sam, where can people best find you?
You can find me on LinkedIn, or you can email our team at support@goldenvolunteer.com. And we look forward to supporting your work.
Excellent. Thank you so much for being with us today and breaking all this down.
Thanks for having me, Thomas, and great to meet all of you.
Thank you for tuning in. Join us next time on Product-Led Growth Leaders. Take care.